We're going to be talking this morning about choices. About choices. Every day, we have thousands, literally thousands of choices to make. Now, we should say right away in a sermon about choices that not everything that happens in our lives or in our world is a result of a choice that we have made. Not everything that happens in our lives or in our world is a part of our plan. And not everything that happens in our lives or in our world is a part of God's plan either. In fact, we know that we have choices to make, and sometimes there are times in life when we are only faced with bad choices. Bad choice A, bad choice B, take your pick. Do you stay in a less than healthy marriage? Or do you tear the marriage and the family apart? Bad choice A, bad choice B. Make your choice. That's the way real life is sometimes. And of course, there are realities in life in which we get absolutely no choice. Like our family of origin, for instance. That first great lottery faced by every newborn, and it is totally out of their control. They get no choice. It's a roll of the dice that includes not only a family, but also a gene pool. And then there is the great fortune or misfortune of where we happen to be born. If we are born in a land of freedom and opportunity, well, that was a very good break. But if we are born in a land of poverty, war, or oppression, then the odds are already against us. Life is about choices, but not every challenge or setback that comes our way is of our choosing. But how we respond, to those challenges and setbacks, that is up to us. Which leads us to our attitude. Our attitude in life is largely a choice. You know, some of the greatest individuals in human history, they lost the birth lottery, but they rose above the squalor to great human achievement. Yes, life is about choices, and we make choices every day. Now, 2 weeks ago, I received an email from one of my high school buddies. I played a lot of golf with him through the years. We grew up together. His email was titled, "A Scheduling Mess." The bottom line is this. Months and months ago, he had entered a ticket lottery of sorts. He had unexpectedly won that ticket lottery, and he now had two tickets for the Super Bowl, box seats that cost him $2,000. But he had not taken into account when he entered the ticket lottery that the big game was scheduled on his wedding day. And so he had a scheduling mess. Now, I'd like to read the email for you. He said, "If you are interested, I'm looking for someone to take my place. The wedding is at St. Andrews in Chicago. Her name is Elizabeth. She's 5'4", 115 pounds, a good cook. She'll be the one dressed in white." Choices. Every day, we have choices. Now, by some misguided choice, I spent most of this past week at Luther Seminary in icy cold Minnesota. Yes, it was 33 degrees below zero as I came out to start my car on Wednesday morning that had been sitting out all night. That's not a wind chill. It was 33 degrees below zero, plus there was a 14-mile-an-hour wind. Now, the first day I arrived in Minnesota, the schools were all closed because of the vast amount of new snow that they had. The next 2 days, they closed the schools in Minnesota because it was simply too cold to go out. Now, when I finished seminary in 1986, Felicia and I decided to leave the frozen tundra of the Twin Cities and come north and west to the Puget Sound. A good choice. as I say every Sunday, it is good to be here. Now, we all face thousands of different choices every day. Like, will I get out of bed today? And if I do get out of bed, will I then make the bed? And then what will I have for breakfast? And then there's 100 variations of coffee drinks. And then attitude. The choice. Will I put on a smile and focus on those things that are good in my life? Will I scan the horizon and consider the things that are in my control and determine each and every day to do some good for my body, some good for my soul, some good for my family and my community? Will I choose an attitude of gratitude? Or will I choose to dwell on those few things that are lacking in my life, and we all have them? Will I choose to spend my time comparing my life to others, those who may have more than I do, or those who may seem happier than I am? Will I focus on scarcity rather than the vast abundance that greets most of us each and every day? Choices. Will I come to church? Will I put myself in the path of Jesus? Will I come to a place where good stories are told, good music is enjoyed, a place where amazing bakers take turns making me cookies every week, a place where a poor preacher tells bad jokes, but polite Christians laugh anyway? It's a choice. Now, of course, you could also make the choice to stay home, to turn on the TV and hear about the latest indictments in Washington. Choices. Our choices, you see, go a long way in determining the quality of your daily life and the trajectory of your entire life. Choices. Now, each and every Sunday, there are four texts assigned to us by the common lectionary. We pick one or two to preach on. On this day, one of the assigned readings is one of the most often read and familiar passages in the entire Bible. And since the Bible is the greatest seller of all time, that means this is one of the most familiar pieces of literature in all of human history. And we tend to read it at weddings. But in reality, it was written to the Christian church in Corinth, a congregation who found themselves in one church fight after another. Now, the Apostle Paul had founded the church in Corinth roughly in the year 51 AD. The church got on its feet, and as was Paul's custom, he moved on. He went off to Ephesus. That is when things started unraveling in Corinth. The good Christian people started choosing up sides. Now, it's hard to imagine Christians fighting among themselves, but that's what was going on. You see, the church is made up of humans. And consequently, the church has a long human history filled with controversy and scandal. Now, this past week, when I was in Minnesota driving around on these snowy roads through the neighborhood, seeing all these churches, I could not help but muse upon this when I saw several church signs that said, "All are welcome." Now, that's one of our sayings here at Trinity as well. But it occurred to me kind of in a new way. Why in the world do we need to say that? If we really followed the one who welcomed all at the table, why would we need to state what should be obvious? Why? Because the church has a long history of excluding, of not welcoming all. All are welcome. All are welcome, sure, if you are white, if you are straight, if you are not divorced, if you're not living with someone or suffering from mental illness or addiction. You see, tragically, the church has a long history of being, might we say, anything but Christian. In Corinth, there were divisions in the parish. They were fighting about pretty much everything. Who should belong to the church? They were fighting and they were choosing up sides. Whose side are you going to be on? They fought about baptism. They fought about the food offered to idols. There were reports of immoral living. People fought over politics. Some claimed to have superior knowledge. There was jealousy and pride. They fought over spiritual gifts. They became judgmental and haughty. 2,000 years ago or today, If the church loses its focus on Jesus, then it's in trouble. And soon it will not be the Church of Jesus. It will be a club wrongfully bearing the name of the servant who welcomed all and washed feet. Now, the church is at its very best and most faithful when it just sticks to Jesus. The Jesus stories, his parables, his teachings, stick to Jesus and follow his example. Take note, notice how he treated people and do likewise. But 2,000 years ago or now, people are people. And left to their own devices, sometimes they choose to be self-righteous, judgmental, cliquish, might we say tribal. Left to their own devices, they would rather have a private club of people who looked and acted just like them. The church in Corinth was a mess. Meanwhile, in Turkey, in the city of Ephesus, the reports of the dysfunction in Corinth were coming in to Paul. It must have been disappointing to him and heartbreaking. And so it was in the year 54 AD, 3 years after the founding of the church in Corinth, Paul sat down to write a letter. The letter you'll find in your Bible, it's known as 1 Corinthians. You can read all about the controversies there. Now, we know that this was not the first letter that Paul had written to the Corinthians, but it was the first one that survived for 2,000 years. And what was very clear to Paul, and I would guess was very clear to the people in Corinth, was this. The way that they were living was not working. The way that they were interacting with each other was harmful. It was not healthy. It did not build up the community. Choices. Life is about choices. Now, I should pause here and bring it home a little bit. I might just ask you, how's it going in your family? Oh, I hear enough of your stories to know the answer. I know there are children who aren't talking to each other, or children who aren't talking to you. And my family's no different from yours, I promise you that. The family business back in the Midwest, it fell apart, leaving the next generation bitter and not talking to each other. Oh, and that boy who went off to seminary, moved west and never really came home, kind of a black sheep. Families are complicated. So, how's it going in your homeowners association? How's that going? How's it going in our country? How is it going between the races 60 years after the civil rights movement? How's it going in Washington, D.C.? Choices. We have choices. Life is about choices. And what is very clear in Corinth is it is not working. The way that the people in Corinth were living was not working. It was less than God intended for them. It was not the abundant life that Jesus desired for them. Now, with all of that as the backstory, listen now to a text that you hear at weddings often. Paul's letter to the church in Corinth. Paul writes, "I will show you a still more excellent way, love." Love is patient and kind. Love is not envious or boastful or arrogant or rude. Love does not insist on its own way. It is not irritable or resentful. Love does not rejoice in wrongdoing, but rejoices in the truth. It bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Love never ends. Now faith, hope, and love abide these three, and the greatest of these is love, right off the pen of the Apostle Paul. A still more excellent way, love. And that love is not a feeling, not God's love. God's love for us is not a feeling. The love of Jesus is not a feeling. Let's be very honest. If Jesus had to love you because you were lovable, well, sorry, you'd be out of luck. And I know I would be out of luck. You see, love, the love we're talking about here, is not a feeling, it's a choice. Did a feeling lead Jesus to love those who betrayed him? No. Did a feeling lead Jesus to forgive those who put him on a cross? No. You see, love is a choice, and Jesus made that choice because it is a more excellent way. It is good and it is right, and in the end it is the only way to live. It is the only way that actually works. Love is a choice. Jesus never gave anyone red roses on Valentine's Day. No, he washed feet. Jesus never gave her the diamond she deserved from Zales. No, he gave his very life. He made the choice to love. It's a more excellent way. And it's a choice. A choice that we can make, or a choice that we can walk away from. The way that the people in Corinth were choosing to live, it was not working. How's it going in your family, your community, in our world? Love is a more excellent way, and it's a choice. You can make that choice. But let me be very clear. You can make that choice for exactly one person in the entire world, and that's for yourself. You may choose love, and your spouse may choose a different way. You may choose love, but your child or your friend may choose a less excellent way, and you have no control over their choices. But every day, you get to make choices. Love is not a feeling, it's not passion, it's not lust. No, what is love? It's patient and kind. So let me ask you, can you choose to be patient and kind one day at a time? Of course you can. Love is a choice. It is not envious or boastful or arrogant or rude. Love does not insist on its own way. It is not irritable or resentful. So can you make every attempt one day at a time to turn your back on those life-taking attributes? Can you make the choice today to choose humility over arrogance, kindness over rudeness? Martin Luther King Jr., I think it's safe to say, grew up in a world that most of us would not recognize. He was black in the South. Martin Luther King Jr. said, "I have decided to stick with love. Hate is too great a burden to bear. I have decided to stick with love. Hate is too great a burden to bear. I have decided." You see, Martin Luther King Jr. understood that love is a decision, love is a choice. Now, you and I are not in control of much that happens in this world. We do not control the weather or the orbits of heavenly bodies. We certainly do not control our children or the attitudes of those who choose to judge us or hurt us or hate us. But every morning when we wake up, we have choices to make. Now, most of them will not matter in the larger picture of our lives or the human story. But every morning when we wake up, we can choose. And we can choose a way that is proven not to work. The way of the world. An eye for an eye. Might makes right. Do whatever is necessary to get more money and stuff. Look out for number one. Or we can choose. We can choose a still more excellent way. The way of Jesus. The way of love. Today, the Apostle Paul asks us to choose love.